Can you guys hear me? Yeah. Okay, I think we're finally going to start. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the last leg of our Office 365 sessions. My name is Richard Calderon, and I'm a productivity TSP here in the Gulf Coast District. Is this too loud for you guys? No? Not too bad? Okay. And I have my colleague here, James Hammonds. We'll allow him to introduce himself.
Yes, yeah, so I'm James Hammonds. I'm Richard's counterpart here. We do basically the same job. We cover Office 365 from a technical perspective for enterprise and partner group accounts. So we're both based out of Austin, but cover Austin, San Antonio, Houston.
And Yep, that's exactly it. So we're both fairly technical people, but this is actually not going to be too technical of a session. The idea behind the power user training essentially is to really kind of twofold. Number one is to just ensure that you've, for those of you that have been participating in the adoption sessions since yesterday, you've gotten a lot of really great sort of thoughts and themes and ideas around, which is probably one of the more sort of overlooked aspects of actually enabling organizations to leverage services like Office 365, which is ultimately getting your users to adopt and to actively start utilizing those services in some way, so it doesn't really just stop with a deployment just because you've turned on a license and actually given software or enabled URLs for your users doesn't mean that they're actually getting anything out of it. So that's why we put this track together. And so the idea behind it, number one, is for you all to really kind of just actually start seeing, if you haven't had a chance to yet, start seeing some of the tools in use, and not just really just sort of like feature by feature, but really kind of in the context of different scenarios that are what we consider to be sort of the most common situations for most business organizations in terms of the challenges that they face and how Office 365 can really help them overcome some of those challenges by being either more efficient or collaborating more effectively and so on and so forth. So what we were going to do today is allow you guys to get a chance to see some of these things in action, ask questions. Hopefully that sort of energizes you, at least to a certain extent, to want to go ahead and work with these tools yourself personally so that you can benefit immediately from those capabilities. But then more importantly, probably the second idea is that we certainly hope that you do feel compelled then at that point to go back within your organization and really sort of drive that message home amongst your own teams. And then obviously if you have the capability and the influence to do so across the entire organization, to also somewhat evangelize the use of these types of services, you know, basically sort of saying, well, here's what I got out of this by doing this, so here's what you guys can get out of it too, and really just sort of helping people understand how those types of tools can work. So that's what we're going to do. It's a three-part session. We're going to start today at 1, or today now, with a couple of different scenarios, and then we're going to move on in parts 2 and part 3. We're going to bring a couple of our colleagues up to deliver the second section. And then we're also, James and I are going to come back for the third session, which I think is around 3:30 or 4 or something like that. And then we'll kind of wrap it up. So we're going to kind of go through an entire set of scenarios during this. We will have a few minutes at the end of each of these for some questions. We also have a couple of giveaways. So the hint on that is we're going to kind of ask a couple of questions of you guys just to sort of see if you're paying attention. And we'll sort of take the first person who raises their hand and can kind of correctly answer a question just for some fun kind of giveaways and things like that. So before we get started, is there anyone in the room who has different expectations than what I sort of described about what we're going to do? Then please sort of speak up, because what we want to do is we want to try to make this as meaningful as possible for you. Nope? Okay, that's a good sign. All right, so kind of moving ahead with this first session. Oh, actually, this is a good thing to mention. if you were in the earlier sessions from yesterday, our colleagues, Avi and Sean, were talking about the Success Center. Actually, let me do a duplicate here. So success.office.com is the site to which you can go to essentially find supplemental information to all of the content that we're going to go through and demonstrate for you today. This section under scenarios pretty much highlights what we at Microsoft consider to be sort of the five, at least as of now, the five primary high-level scenarios that are impacting users on a day-to-day basis today So we're going to go through these generally as getting it done from anywhere, which is really going to kind of dive deep into some of the Office tools, so Office Pro Plus, and how you can really interact with Office from any device, at any time, from any place. Email and calendar on the go is actually what I'm going to start with here today. We're going to kind of drill in further into that. Store, sync, and share your files, running more effective meetings, and then working like a network. So those are the scenarios which we're going to go through here over the next, the rest of this afternoon in the three sessions. I did want to just sort of point out a couple of things to you when you go to the site. So again, success.office.com. If you drill into this scenarios section, you can find all these related resources. I'm just going to pull these up, as well as some learn how it works information. So all these different related resources can help you both learn yourself how these capabilities work, but they can also help you provide awareness and help your organization, your teams, and your individuals get an understanding of where we're going with this. So when you're ready to start announcing that we're going to start leveraging these tools and so forth, there's an announcement template here. There is a scenario learning path content here, essentially. So this is specific to the scenario, but these literally drill you down into, you know, viewing your calendar and so forth, which is going to walk you literally step by step in Office 365 how to go through some of these particular activities. So again, this is something that I would highly encourage all of you to start with. Start with going into these sections, the learning path content. Yeah, same thing here. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I'll interject real quick. So yep. The other thing is this content is meant to kind of provide a foundation, right? And so this is the stuff that will ensure that your users don't get frustrated because they know how to actually kind of interact with the service and do things. They are rudimentary and, again, kind of foundational. And so a lot of what we're going to go through today incorporates some of that, but we're going to go beyond that. So we wanted for you guys to have something that goes a bit beyond this. And, you know, with the intention that this is the type of thing that you guys can do for the folks that are going to be consuming the service within your organizations, right? So we do a lot of demonstrations and, you know, kind of evangelization ourselves as Microsoft folks, as you can imagine. But once you kind of buy into something, a service like this, you know, it's all about kind of getting that adoption, ensuring that folks are getting value, right? And so these are the types of things that, you know, I, as a customer of Microsoft, whenever I rolled out the technology, I spent a lot of time ensuring that folks understood how to use it, and we walked through scenarios that were relevant. So these things are going to have kind of generic scenarios, but we find them to be applicable to a lot of folks.
Question.
Yeah,
a productivity hub.
So there is, and there's a wealth of content. Success.office.com is going to have a lot more stuff. So there's a lot of facets to it, but there's that content that you can pull down, and Avi has something to say. I was getting there.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll get to that. So success.office.com has content that you can download and provide as kind of handouts and things like that, or, you know, kind of host internally. There is, from an Office 365 perspective, we have a program called Fast Track, whereby if your tenant has that content deployed to it, it has a wealth of stuff that is part of your SharePoint online. And it has anything from you know, your administrators can find labs and things like that from through that content, as well as, you know, end-user training. So there is that. It is packaged and ready to go. If you have customers that are deployed, or you are a customer that's deployed and don't have that, you can work with your Microsoft account team to get that deployed, or your partner to get that deployed in your environment. Does that answer the question? Cool.
So it's not on-prem installable, but it's that content that can be installed to your SharePoint online tenant. That's effectively the same as the Productivity Hub was. Okay, so we talked about that these are the scenarios with which we're going to go through. Going to go ahead and get started with the, actually this one was, email and calendar, right, on the go. Okay, we're going to get started with this one here and just kind of dive into the demonstrations. Let's do a duplicate. Oh, and that's my boy. How'd that get up there? Okay. So if you're like me, most of you have at least one or more devices, really. I think just about everybody has a smartphone these days. You know, that's the device typically, well, the first thing in the morning, you know, I'm kind of getting ready, and or if I know that I've kind of got some meetings or some information that I was waiting for that someone maybe was working on the night before, that's typically the first device that I kind of grab and start sorting my way through in the morning, at least to kind of get oriented with if there's anything sort of, you know, pressing that's going on. And then once I'm able to make my way into the office or to the customer site, wherever I'm going, and I pull out my PC or my Surface in this case, then I'll start going into more of the either a browser-based email client like Office Web Applications, or if you have the rich client, Outlook 2013, for example, then kind of go from there. So what I thought I would do is at least just in this particular scenario kind of show you sort of what this typical workflow might kind of look like, and then just sort of point out some of those capabilities maybe with which you might not be familiar. But this is a particular person. Her name is Sarah Davis. This is her inbox here, and she has been on vacation apparently because she hasn't really checked email in a while. But effectively, a couple of things that you know you might do first thing in the morning is just sort of see, is there anything pressing? And so one thing that you can do is you can certainly look at urgent emails. If they've been flagged as urgent, then you can see that filters that down pretty quickly so that you can say, okay, well, I need to reply to Janet here or sort of see what she's referring to and say, you know, have I had a chance to review that? Well, yes, I have, and just sort of send her a quick reply. So I'm kind of done with that. I'm going to go back to all and sort of sort through. There's a new capability that we recently released in the service that's called Clutter. And what Clutter effectively allows you to do is if you're going, you know, on sort of a daily basis like most people, you end up with dozens and maybe tens of dozens, if not hundreds, of email messages. They're typically not all as important as the others. So some are very important to you, and some are just sort of considered noise. You still might want to review that content at some point, but maybe it's just not really important to you in what you're doing at this particular moment. So Clutter allows you to basically, you can opt in to leveraging this capability in Office 365. But essentially what it allows you to do is just sort of say, when messages are coming in that sort of match a particular type of, I'll just sort of generally say a rule of some sorts, then just sort of move them over into this Clutter folder for me, so that they're basically eliminating or reducing the amount of content that I have to look at any given point in time. So for example here, I might say that, something like, you know, the annual Contoso dog walk for charity, basically. That's great that my coworkers are sending that information out for me to review. But really, what I'm going to do is just sort of move that item into this folder called Clutter right here. And that's effectively beginning what we call training the system. So there are these different signals that are basically being analyzed at a given point in time in your inbox around clutter. And so this is one signal that I'm essentially sending to the service, which is saying this content maybe from this particular sender, or if it's of this particular type of information, this is something that I'm just going to kind of consider to be clutter. So start to learn that maybe I would really rather just sort of move that sort of stuff out at the moment. So these are the types of things that I can do, again, just here from my phone, just kind of getting started in the morning. The next thing I'm going to kind of move to is to the Outlook client, to the Outlook web app client. So this is running in Office 365, obviously in the browser. This is Sarah's email here. If I would to look down here a second, you see that the Contoso Dog Walk for Charity email is there. But if I were to refresh the page here, it should move it out into clutter. There's a little bit easier way to manage this actually in the Office Outlook web app itself, which is if I'm locating items like the company soccer team again, okay, great, really don't need to know about that. If I right-click on this, I can just simply say I want to mark this as clutter. That's going to move this over here. If you're using clutter for the first time, it actually sort of pops up this nice little pop over here, which just sort of gives you a little bit more information about that. Clutter actually is something that, again, can be opted in and out of at any point by a particular user. And so the way that you would do that, in this case, in Outlook Web Access, is I'm going to use the little gear setting up here in the top right corner. I'm going to go down here to options. And then, again, this is on a per-user basis. Under mail, under automatic processing, I'm going to choose clutter. And there you see there's the option to either set or not. So I can say I do want to go ahead and separate items that is identified as clutter. and save that. And so from this point forward now, again, it's going to essentially start kind of based on some fundamental understanding of what's important to you in terms of who you interact with regularly, or the training that you provide by indicating what types of messages, right-clicking and saying this item is clutter. That's essentially going to start informing the system as to what messages to move. Yes? You can, yeah.
And can they recreate it and just name it clutter again, and will it work the same way if that's what they do?
So once you've basically opted in to clutter, that clutter folder is really kind of always there for the most part. When I said I do, I actually thought you were asking a slightly different question, which is essentially, go ahead.
So it's a system folder.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. But if they opt out.
Yeah. Yeah, what I thought you were asking actually was, so let's say that this clutter folder starts to really grow and grow to thousands of messages at any given point. There is a capability where you can just say up here at the top, you can just say delete all at one time, and it just sort of empties out the clutter folder essentially for you. One thing that you might notice if you look just sort of as the visual difference between your normal inbox and the clutter inbox itself, or the clutter folder itself, is that normal inboxes, at least in Office web apps, have this sort of three-line format, where you've got the who it's from, and then the title, and then start to see the preview. Whereas if you go into clutter, you see it may be a little difficult to see, but it's actually just in black text, and there's really only the two lines there, just to kind of a really quick visual indicator. You can also, if you sort of hover over just sort of the normal actions that you can take, obviously you can delete items, but you can also on an individual basis or right click and say, I don't really want to mark this as clutter, I want to say it's not clutter. So if the system over time is starting to kind of anticipate what they think what it thinks it should move to the clutter folder, but in fact you really don't want that type of content to be clutter, you can actually choose for it to not be. And again, you're sort of retraining the system to say, okay, well, a message of this type or from this sender or so forth will no longer be automatically moving it to the clutter folder and just in your inbox. There's a question back there. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I kind of characterize it like this. Like, there's a lot of stuff that we opt into on purpose, right? So kind of these marketing emails and stuff like that, I want to keep track of events that are coming, right? So it's still stuff that I care about, but lower priority. Junk is going to be the stuff that you really don't want that's really hard to shake, right, to get rid of. And so junk is meant to get it out of your view and kind of tuck it away to where you don't have to deal with it. Clutter is more, hey, you might want to look at this, but it is not as pressing as the stuff that we keep in your inbox.
Yeah.
So from that user perspective, after they opt into this, do you see, from an admin perspective, do you get, well, I got this in here, but I don't really want, is that also controlled by rules and things of that nature, or is it just on, off, and that's it?
So it's on, off, and okay. It has an algorithm that learns. Yeah, that's just the way it works.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's all really sitting in your inbox at a given point. It's just being sort of shuffled off into this location. One other question over here somewhere? No? Okay. All right. So next thing I kind of wanted to move on to, and again, these are some of the things really just to sort of highlight to you where some of the additional efficiencies really kind of come from leveraging some of the Office tools like Outlook Web Access. So, again, just trying to reduce or eliminate the amount of information with which you actually have to kind of go through at any given point in time. This is not new, but this is something I wanted to sort of showcase, is the ability to essentially group your email items into what are called conversations. And so by default, that's actually on. You can turn this off at a folder-by-folder level if you would like. But essentially, this is now kind of gone, I've turned it off and kind of gone to the flattened view. And what happens here in this case, if you can see, is that I've got this message that's from Bonnie, that it was in reply to a come one, come all message title. And then here's the reply from Dennis and so forth. And if I keep going down, I have to kind of look through, essentially in this case, I've sorted it by descending chronological order. I've kind of got to find my way through here to sort of see who replied to what. If I choose to turn on conversations, if you take a quick look while I do this, hip around the screen, effectively what it does is it just collapses down together all of the messages that were of a particular subject, essentially. I know some of my colleagues, like Sean, who's sitting here, who was speaking yesterday, is actually good at, when necessary, he actually will change the subject of the message to get it out of that conversation loop, because there's a need to highlight that message in some way, shape, or form. If they're all, if you have the conversation view on and everything's sort of all blended together, there's certainly value to that so that you can see it all in one place. Here, I'll go and expand this for you so you can see. So there are all those messages now, basically from the point that when it started through all of the different replies that are all grouped together in a conversation. But again, in that particular use case where Sean, and I don't know if you wanted to comment on that or not, Sean, but...
I'm a filer. I think there's two types of people. There's filers and storers, and storers are ones that just let it all go everywhere, and they look for search. They use search to do. Is it the pilers? The
pilers. Filers, okay. And pilers.
Okay, so I'm the. What am I? The filer. Okay, yeah. So yeah, that's what I do. I actually will change titles. So I'll even do it with all my customers. If they send me an email with a question, I'll reply back and change the subject to the company name with their subject on it, and I'll even do it internally when I'm having a communication internally and I want to remove the customer. I will change the subject to internally with the customer name, and then I start filing stuff away. The reason I do that is because what I've learned, well, I'll make this mistake once, is we get on this threaded communication, you meant to do something internally, and then you send it out to a customer, and then you go, oh crap, what did I just do? So yeah. So that's the reason I do it. So something to think about.
Cool. Thanks, Sean.
One other thing I'll point out, too, is that conversations span folders. So you'll see that as we expand one, you'll see content that's coming from deleted items and things like that.
Right.
And so even sent items are going to show up in line in that. Just it's a nice consolidated view that helps me stay organized.
Exactly. Okay, one other thing I wanted to show, and this was actually being showcased just for a moment in the keynote yesterday morning, is the ability to sort of change the way that you think about sending attached files. So, you know, this is a sort of a classic challenge that I think anyone has had from the time that you started, you know, essentially creating a document and then attaching it as that file to an email and sending it off to 10 different people to review, asking them to make edits, and then somehow figuring out how to get it back to you so that you can collapse it all down into one master copy. Painful, to say the least. So we took that to heart. And what we did is we effectively built in, under the insert option, and again, this is tied into Outlook Web Access at this current time, but the ability to do attachments or, as you see, OneDrive files. So if I do attachments or OneDrive files, it actually pops open this screen here. And again, this is assuming that you're leveraging all these capabilities in the service. But you can choose to effectively say that, you know, it's these notes from the staff meeting that I want to go ahead and submit over to one or more of my people so that they have that content. Or maybe they needed to add their notes that they had taken as well. And so it still doesn't just automatically just assume that's what you want to do. It's still going to give you one more chance to sort of say, well, what do you really want to do with this? Do you want to go ahead and share it using your OneDrive? Or do you want to go ahead and send it as an attachment where essentially it's just like it was before, everybody gets a copy? And so what I'll do is just go ahead and show you the ability to do it from OneDrive. And the one thing, you know, it's just kind of subtle, but the one thing you'll notice that's different about this from an icon perspective is it's got the little cloud on the file, and it also says that recipients can edit in this case. Okay, so by default, this is also the other cool thing about what this does automatically for you is you have this file stored in OneDrive, which we're going to talk a little bit more, I think, in session 3 this afternoon. We're going to deeper dive into that. But you store it in OneDrive, and then automatically, depending on to whom you're sending this message, so I might be sending it to Alex Darrow in this case, and maybe Molly Dempsey. What it effectively does is it grants the edit permissions to those users in this one act, in this one action. Okay. I'm sorry. The one where it's been attached with OneDrive. I don't think it does it that way.
No.
Yeah. But I think this is really just to remove for the most part. Or I guess you can change this if you wanted to say I just want them to have read access only. Change that there in this case, or you can remove that so that you can add another one. But anyway, the usefulness of this here is just in that use case I was describing. So in this case, you know, I might be the document owner. I might be the person that ultimately needs to retain ownership of the information. And then, of course, once it's ready, maybe then I sort of PDF and publish it out somewhere else so that it's in its master form. But if I am the owner and I'm storing it in OneDrive, then by sending this effectively, it's sort of the link to, if you will, the document, except it actually is their ability to make edits, in this case, if I changed it back to the document, it's still stored in my OneDrive location. So it's still the single copy of the file that I'm now effectively enabling my team members to have the option of being able to go in and make edits to. Okay. Questions about that?
So when they make edits to it and save it, it does, what's the naming convention for the version?
So versioning is dependent on the library. In OneDrive for Business, we have a default of 10 versions. But same file name, and if you rename it to a different, like V1, V2, which I see customers or you know folks do, and I kind of cringe because I'm like, versioning is built in. Anyway, but you can go back and click on version history and restore a prior version if you so desire.
So there's no
you don't have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely one of the beauties of the versioning capability in SharePoint, is not having to worry about that V1-V2 kind of thing anymore for documents. Your OneDrive content,
yeah.
Essentially. So the content remains. Yeah, the content remains, and then an administrator, effectively, I believe, would have the access to go in and grant themselves administrative rights to a user's personal OneDrive files. In which case, then you have the option to sort of choose what you would do at that point. I think in some cases, I've got customers where that exact thing happens. They've shared out some of their OneDrive files to their teammates at some point in time. They leave the company, they'll actually leave that person's OneDrive repository enabled for some short length of time so that those folks can effectively either go grab that content so that they have their own copies or someone else takes ownership of it essentially. But it doesn't just sort of, once you sort of deactivate a user in, say, Active Directory, it doesn't just immediately delete or eliminate that content.
I'll be specific here. So if you disable the user, everything's fine. It's when you deallocate the license.
Yes.
So when that license gets removed from that user, then a clock starts ticking, 14
right.
days.
Okay.
Okay? And then
yeah.
If you don't define a secondary administrator inside of the profile, it will notify their manager that their content is going to expire, essentially. If you do assign a secondary administrator, then that individual will get it. The other thing there is if you issue a hold on that content, assuming they have the licensing to do that, then it won't expire.
Right.
Now, when you say manager, that's assuming that's through their manager listed in Active Directory.
Right. Yeah, if you populate that. Right. Yeah, so if you don't, then I would highly recommend populating a secondary administrator in the profile settings.
Cool. Okay, so that those are the things I really wanted to highlight around email. There's certainly a whole lot of other things that you can do. But again, the training content that you can get off the Success Center literally walks you through all of the kinds of good stuff that you would want to know and ultimately be able to share with your teams as well, too, around email. Did want to show just a couple of quick things here, and then I'm going to pass it off to James around calendaring and people and some of the other things. I don't know that if I actually mentioned this or not to you and whether or not you've seen this recent change within your Office 365 tenant, but we actually have changed to sort of a paradigm in which you can actually get to the what we just sort of generally refer to as the applications in Office web apps or in the browser in general, and that's through what's called the app launcher now. So you have this grid that shows up in the upper left of the screen. Effectively, the reasoning behind this was, you know, the links to all of those apps were getting really long, depending on what licenses were available to you. So you had Outlook and Calendar and People and Delve and Yammer and OneDrive, and it just kept going and expanding and further here. And that just not only is scalable, but it doesn't really make sense to a lot of users. So the engineering team came up with this app launcher concept. I think it's going to be great because it's going to continue to allow you to expand us to expand the service with new capabilities over time. It's all dependent on what licenses you've actually assigned to your users. Obviously, in this case, if they have Exchange, which effectively is Outlook, Calendar, People, and Tasks, if you've enabled them for Yammer, if you've enabled them for OneDrive, SharePoint, really, OneDrive Insights, Delve, Office 365 Video, which is recent, just kind of came out, and then, of course, all the Office Online applications and so forth. One of the things that you can do that's kind of cool, I'll show you here really quickly, is you also have, for three of these items, you can also pin them to the top nav bar if you want. And when you do that, it just kind of drops them up over here. So if they're the most sort of the most used items, you might pin these particular ones up here just so you don't necessarily have to do two clicks, one on the app launcher and then one on calendar or so forth. You could just kind of go sort of the old method and just do it here. I think they probably considered just doing icons up here at one point in time, but that's not as useful really for the most part. So the app launcher is really kind of great. Okay, so to fast forwarding, because I'm getting into James's time, around calendaring, this stuff is pretty straightforward for the most part again too. You know, if you want to schedule meetings with people, probably the biggest thing that's of use, and this is really more an Exchange thing than it is an Outlook thing, is that ability to kind of peer into other people's calendars. So again, if I wanted to invite a couple of my teammates like Alex, like Molly, and then take sort of a guess at sort of when they might be available, if I click on Scheduling Assistant, it basically pulls up that view, and you can kind of look on a day-by-day basis or a weekly basis at any given point sort of if they have availability. And so that gives you the option then of being able to choose a time slot for the meeting to say, well, 3 to 4 o'clock seems like that would be open for everybody, and you know, send your meeting off in that way. The other thing that we added here to the Office or the Outlook web app is the ability to schedule link meetings here from the web app itself, which is this icon or this button here for online meeting. When you do that, then that sort of drops the online meeting information here into your meeting invitation, which then you can go forth and describe what the meeting is for and so forth. Question?
Does that create a unique URL like if you schedule
it? It's per user,
so if you click on the
user,
online meeting
believe.
Settings there, this guy right there.
Yep. Maybe it doesn't show in
yeah, it's not going to show here. Oh, so, yeah, inside of Outlook, you yeah. can designate and say this is a private meeting that uses a unique URL.
Yeah.
This one evidently is going to use the same one. Right. Actually, Albert, who is in the link or Skype for Business, PG could probably watch for. Yeah. There we go. So that's the answer.
Yeah.
Next. So in the OWA apps, you can. You can schedule link meetings.
Yeah.
I was pleasantly surprised to find that. That was awesome.
Cool. Okay, that's really, and again, lots more things that you can do in calendaring, but that was the one that I think most people were interested, that I spoke to that wanted to see. Around people, one thing that's probably just kind of not well understood, is that in your Office 365 tenancy, let's assume that you're doing something like Active Directory federation and synchronization, you have the ability to actually find just about any user that's in the organization. If I clicked on all users under the directory here, for example, this is a fairly small organization, but I can scroll through here or I can use search to find people within the company. And let's say, you know, Julian Isla, for example, I can very quickly figure out who that person is based on their profile. And then on the far right here, I can say add to contacts, which now essentially gives me the ability to edit the additional information if I really wanted to. Save that person's into my contact list, so when I go back to my context, you'll see that Julian is now listed here. So you have the ability to go forth and find people, add them in if they're folks that you would regularly interact with. And then the last thing I wanted to do actually is to show tasks, but talk about that really from the perspective of the Outlook client, because there are a couple of disparities, a couple of things that you can and can't do between Outlook Web Access versus the Rich client. And one of them is around this tasks thing that I'm going to describe to you here. So what I'm going to do is go to tasks in Outlook and then create a new task. And effectively, the thing that I wanted to show you that you can't do in OWA, but you can do in Outlook, is the ability to essentially assign a task to someone else. So if I wanted to say assign task, I can choose, again, somebody in my organization. Let's say Molly and, you know, cover on TPS reports, you know, kind of thing, right? Did you get the memo? And this will allow me to essentially send to her a task that I can say, you know, what the due date is on and so forth, and then be able to have options as to whether or not I'm able to receive sort of an updated copy of that and what the status of that is and so forth. And basically, it's kind of like what we effectively refer to as the NAG task in that case there, where I'm assigning it to someone else. That's one of those things that you can't do in the web app, but you can do in Outlook. Okay, I think that's really what I wanted to showcase here from the email and calendaring on the go. Do you want to jump into getting it done from anywhere?
I like getting it done from anywhere.
Cool.
Fantastic. I may impose and ask you to pull this up on there.
I will do.
Okay. So the work from anywhere demo and the scenario here is really around kind of office and just the ability to have this kind of ubiquitous collaborative experience, right? So wherever I am, whatever device, whatever connectivity I have, I can, so long as you have connectivity to some degree, modify my content, right, and interact with it. And so we're going to talk a little bit about what Office for PC, Mac, and all that kind of stuff is through the service. We'll go through document creation. I'm fairly certain most folks know how to create a document, so we'll kind of modify that a touch. Take a look at what the interfaces look like for saving and sharing content, and then talk about OneNote for Anywhere, which is my all-time favorite program, just shy of Excel. And then take a look at the Office Online experience. And so with that, from an Office 365 perspective, Office 365 is unique in that it is per-user licensing, meaning that it doesn't matter, you know, as we as users have multiple devices, I don't have to buy a copy of Office for this device and this device and this device and this device. It's one. I activate that license in the service. The user can then activate it on his or her tablet, Mac, PC. What we get with that is five combinations of PCs or Macs, five tablets, and five phones. And so this allows us quite a large number of devices per individual. And you can install it on multiple machines. It's just as an individual, you can only activate it on so many. One thing I will call out is we recently released something called shared computer activation. So if you're an administrator and care about this whatsoever, if you have shared workstations, there is something that will allow kind of for an ephemeral license that's not tracked in those five on shared machines. And so those aren't tied to an individual. They just have a very short time span so long as that person is licensed for Office. All right, so let's take a look at what it looks like. And one of the things here is we're going to be going through a persona that is Karen Berg. And so Karen Berg and the fictitious company Contoso, which I'm sure none of you have ever heard of, is a salesperson, right? So like me, kind of a mobile individual that's kind of running around and working on decks for presentations and things like that. And so this is really kind of a glimpse into my daily life, which is always kind of chaotic. I never quite know what I'm going to be presenting at what time, but it's a lot of fun. So in this example, we have... Karen's going to be giving a presentation on the M400 phone. And so I'm going to click on the sales and marketing slide. If the network cooperates, which it kind of does, fantastic. We'll go into the collateral center page. And so from here, you'll see a few things. We've got this slide deck that's appearing inside of the PowerPoint online. I can click through this. And one of the things that we're looking at is this deck. So this is the one that we're going to be presenting. And ultimately, I want to edit this presentation and make a few changes to it to ensure that I encapsulate all the features for this particular device. This is sitting inside of a slide library. It's actually this M400 promotion. But I've got a few, pardon me while I pull Yammer and get ahead of myself. I've got a few options here. So I can certainly edit in PowerPoint online or I can edit inside of the full client. So I'm going to click the full client here just so we can kind of step through a couple of things. All right, so this is our deck. And this is sitting inside of a SharePoint online site. So the beauty here is that this deck is sitting in the cloud. Doesn't matter if I'm at home. And me personally, I have a workstation sitting in my home office that I never move because it's a bit bulky. And our organization was kind enough to get us Surface Pro 3s, which are very sleek and portable. And so this is the guy that I run around with. But while I'm at home, I don't bother getting out the Surface because all of my stuff is sitting in the service. So I'll go through and make modifications to slide decks on that machine at the office. And then whenever I get to a customer site or maybe to a coffee shop or whatever, I'll go in and make modifications beyond that. One of the really nice things that we'll touch, I'll actually show you here in a second, but and this ties a bit more to OneDrive for Business, but it's one of my favorite functionalities is this kind of roaming recent documents. So it's aware of the content that I've modified most recently. And that follows me across devices, okay? And so if I click on File here and Open, you'll see these are the, of course, this is a poor example because these are sitting on the local machine here, but this M400, when I go on my phone a little bit later, you'll see M400 shows us the most recent presentation that this phone accessed, or that the phone thinks it accessed. And so some of the highlights here that I want to add, there is one, there's Dan Jump making modifications to my file, one that I'm going to add. So one of the M400 highlights is hugs, right? So Karen gives a hug to every customer who buys 1,000 units or more. So anyway, so I'm just going to make a quick edit here. We're going to save that back up. And so one of the other things from an Office perspective that we can do is we have very quick access to the ability to share this. So if I go into the share, I can go through and invite people, right? So this looks pretty much like, let's see, Dan Jay. I should probably get that right. He is the CEO of Contoso, actually. All right. So I've typed Dan Jay. So a couple of things here you'll notice. This comes through with presence, so I can go in and start IMing with Dan if I so desire. I can call him, do video, shoot an email, what have you. And you'll see here in the same way that when I set that attachment, I can choose whether or not I want Dan to be able to edit or view this content. Because we're going to be collaborating on this, I'm going to go ahead and say he can edit. So Dan, here's the deck I mentioned. All right, and I'll share that out. Fantastic. And so this is going to blast an email to Dan indicating that that content is available. Okay, so we'll close this. And so one of the other things as we look at this, when I click on the promotion from SharePoint, one of the latest things that we've kind of introduced is this concept of document conversations. And so there are times where, you know, so Dan and I have an email thread going back and forth about this particular document, right? So we may have some history there, some context that's relevant to that artifact. But if someone who comes in later to collaborate on that is not part of that email thread, they may not get all of that additional context. And so with this, we have the ability to post documents essentially into Yammer. They're still housed inside of SharePoint Online, but we can tie that to the a Yammer conversation, just based on its URL, and have that threaded conversation going on about that document. So that way, if folks come back in later on, and yeah, so here we go. Dan asked that. Yes, I included the bit about hugs. All right, so we'll post that. And as we click post, if the network cooperates, big money, no whammies. All right, fantastic. So this is going to be very interesting for me to show the rest of the... let's try to post one more time. Working on it. Okay. Anyway, regardless, this allows us the ability to kind of have that threaded conversation, have a history about that document that is not included inside of the document. So I have folks that are highly interested in having this kind of meta conversation without running the risk of sending off something with comments in it that weren't meant for public consumption. So kind of in the same way that Sean was talking about sending an email to someone external when you wanted to keep that all internal, this is a fantastic way to do it. And speaking of, and we'll touch a little bit on Yammer later, but this will also pull conversations across groups. It's all security trimmed, so if there are private groups that are having a conversation about this and someone opens this and they're not part of that group, they won't see that particular conversation, but they'll see everything that they have access to.
In the conversations, which document version does it bring up?
The latest.
Okay.
Yeah, it's always the latest.
I have noticed that by default it goes to all companies.
Yes, it's a great observation there. So you do have the ability to change the group there. And Avi, keep me honest here, were we changing that? Yeah, and so that's part of kind of Yammer's A/B testing is we'll test two scenarios and see which one has the greatest adoption or kind of impact on usage, and whatever trumps will get implemented. So great question there.
That's the thing, I don't think so.
Yeah, not right now. Yeah, so I can go in here if I'm going to add a new thread, and I can even drop this to a new group. And moving this out of all company, right? So I, there we go, sales. I can't. Oh, yeah. My typehead's not going to do much of anything right now. That's a good point. Anyway, but so I can do type ahead and actually get the group that I want to target. Yeah, when that very first rolled out, we at Microsoft got a lot of all company posts about random documents. Yeah. It was entertaining.
Yeah, that's usually a user training scenario where you start to train the organization to put documents in specific groups that they want to target. Does start.
All right, and so I'm gonna flip over to Richard's machine real quick. So we'll dismiss all that fun stuff.
Quick question about all companies, that plugin or site collection, whatever.
So from a Yammer context, it is a default group. So
I was just thinking where the document lives, right?
Yeah.
If it starts dumping there over time, you're gonna.
Right. So. This document lives specifically inside of a document library on a specific site collection. And so whenever we post that to Yammer, the linkage there is just the URL to the document. So in,
okay,
yeah, it's just, yeah, it's where the conversation is versus the content. Okay. Kind of what I'm talking about. Cool. All right, any other questions? Okay. Oh, I need my office remote. Pardon me while I back out real quick. So I'm going to click on Office here. And so this is something that, you know, again, as a mobile seller, I've made some modifications to this particular document. You know, I might have done it at the Starbucks down the street. You know, I've created it at home, made a quick adjustment. And now I'm sitting in the customer's lobby. And I want to just go through my notes, maybe flip through the deck one more time, make sure that I am, you know, crystal clear on the content that I've added. And so I'll sit down and pull this up. And again, this is the Office Mobile. So this recent documents is across platforms, so we'll see this inside of the Office clients. But I can click on this M400 promotion, and so this will all pull up. The phone's happy about the network, somewhat. There we go. And so I can actually flip through here and see that. And you'll notice here at the bottom, I'll see the notes that are added. Look at there. Yeah, so you can actually kind of scroll down. So if you're in a landscape view, the notes will be just there. Maybe I can flip through this. You can see here I'm getting the animation, so it's building. My save didn't finish uploading evidently before the network crashed. We would see hugs at the bottom here, so just pretend like you do, because that's the magic. I did make the qualification about connectivity previously. Yeah. All right. Okay. And so that's all fantastic. You know, I love the ability to kind of edit these things from anywhere and have this content sitting out. I mentioned also that I love OneNote. So who in here uses OneNote on a regular basis? My people. Fantastic. Along the lines of having kind of this content that's relevant to a given event or something like that, I use OneNote and tie that to meetings on a regular basis. And so you saw Richard show us how to add a link meeting and include that URL inside of the meeting invite. And I'm hoping. Yeah. Big hope, big money. Oh, I got some four-letter words. Actually, don't worry about flipping that. Let's just go to Dan, because we'll see the same presentation. Okay. All right. We'll go with Plan B. Fantastic. Oh, there. Okay. So as soon as I swapped off, it decided, hey, I'm going to come back. Fantastic. All right. So you'll see here, I've got a couple of things. So I've got this invite. It says join the link meeting, right? View meeting notes. So that meeting notes is the thing that's particularly interesting to me. Okay, so in the same way that whenever I set up this meeting, you add link meeting. And by the way, here's where the meeting options are to go back to that other question. Oh, no, you can't do that here. It's when you first set up. We'll get to that. I'll post a screenshot in Yammer for that one. But anyway, on the view meeting notes, so I've got a couple options. I can click this. That will bring me into whatever client I'm using on the given device. So what's kind of cool is I actually emailed this to my mobile phone. When I click on that view meeting notes link on the mobile phone, it pulls up OneNote on the mobile device. In the same way, if I click on this, this will pull up my default OneNote application on my computer. Or if I'm something on a device that doesn't have OneNote, I can click this web view. For our purposes, we're going to click view meeting notes and pull up the rich client view. And so a couple of things on this is you'll see that it includes the meeting invite. It's got the date, the location, the subject, and all that kind of fun stuff. And I've got this, please see the notebook. So this is the original note in the message. Down below, I've got participants. So, and you'll see there are little checkboxes next to those. So because of the integration with Link, as those attendees come in through Link, those boxes get checked. If I have folks that come in through Dialtone, I'll get their caller ID and a checkbox next to them. Now, certainly I can add, if I had somebody that crashed my meeting, crashers, and I can certainly check that, right? And it's the same, very similar to the checkboxes that you have there. So if it's something that wasn't coming through Link or something like that, you could always check that box if you had someone sitting next to you and you wanted to just record that. You'll note here at the agenda, I've got a bulleted list here. The fun thing about this, and we'll talk a little bit about co-authoring a little bit later, but just from a OneNote perspective, co-authoring is amazing. So this is sitting inside of a SharePoint site. It's a team notebook, and it affords me quite a bit of functionality. So Richard has this open, and I'm going to get him to open it in the rich client so we can kind of see real time. We can go through and do a couple of things. So a lot of times, and this is very compelling inside in the context of a whiteboarding session, we have these perceptive pixel devices that are basically giant tablets. But I'll go through as I am giving presentations and just start drawing. So I'll pull up the OneNote for that particular meeting, and we'll add context or kind of whiteboard whatever we want to do. And at the end of that meeting, I don't have to worry about snapping a picture of anything. I can just send out the note, right? So for folks who are on the team that have access to it, they can go in and just pull up the note themselves. And so what's kind of cool is meeting minutes can happen in real time. And so as Richard goes in, and you can actually start hammering out some notes just for grins.
Yeah, I was
going to
see if I get this sync going
here. Yeah, it'll take a sec to sync. That's generally what I need.
That's what I need.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm not going to write too many words here because you're like, James, you need help.
Vizio doesn't convert that for you.
No. Vizio doesn't, doesn't see me at all. So anyway, with a couple of seconds, and we may be having network issues again. Yeah. I'll just force a sync. So that's another thing, too, is that if there are folks, if you really like to be that person that kind of hammer, send, and receive for your emails to try and get it there fast, there is a sync this notebook now, and it's shift F9 as opposed to just F9 in the client. But anyway, okay, cool. Richard's off the network now.
Yeah, that line's
fun times. So let me show you the other fun thing here, because this is something that I do use. Absolutely. I don't do that. You want to see what the embedding? Yeah, it's exactly kind of what you think it would be. If we go into, I should be on this device here. Oh, no, that one. So if I do a new appointment, and we'll go in here. Yeah. Well, we'll do this. Meeting notes. So if I click on the meeting notes, two options. One is share notes with the meeting or take notes on my own. Take notes on my own generally indicates that I'm going to put it on a notebook that is mine, and so it's not going to include it in the meeting invite itself because it's just my stuff. But if we're working out loud and all that kind of fun stuff, and I click share notes with the meeting, I'm prompted to choose which notebook I want to publish this to. And so you'll see here I've got the marketing team notebook. This is where I can go in and kind of add that. Yes. You have to have it connected to whatever OneNote application you're using on your device. And so, well, in this case, OneNote Desktop is what I have that notebook open in. So initially when I set this up, I did not have that open. So I had to go back through and like, okay, click on the link, open.
Okay. We'll
yeah. That's it. Gotcha. That's it. Question?
So
there's a couple of things you could do there. One would be remove the permissions. So if somebody doesn't have permissions to your notebook, they're not going to see them. You could, too, move the page. In terms of the linkage, you know, those folks will get kind of a poor experience because it'll go to nowhere, and so you'll probably get some questions. So you may want to, if you decide to take notes on your own, go through and remove that from the invite and then send an updated invite and kind of re-enter your own notes. Does that make sense? Fantastic. Okay, cool. So we'll see if I can get this guy to come up. So if Richard won't come over and play with me in terms of co-authoring, I'll just do it from my phone. So we'll give this a second to synchronize, but what we're going to find is that my little drawings and all that kind of happy stuff should appear. Yeah, along with my poor typing, all that stuff. Oh, now my machine's offline. Perfect. Perfect. And again, the beauty of it is when I do connect, all of this stuff is going to synchronize automatically, and it'll be great. All right. So this harkens back to Jason's topic earlier about ensuring network connectivity and all that kind of fun stuff, because if you're not online,
it's
kind of the. I would say this because there are scenarios where, you know, again, from a synchronization perspective, we'll talk about this a little bit on when we look at OneDrive for Business, but certainly in this. I've absolutely gone into customer meetings where I have written out my notes. I've written them on a mobile device and captured all of that, and then it synchronizes back. So from an account team perspective, we have SharePoint sites for all of our customers. When I have a meeting with a customer, when Sean has a meeting with a customer, or when Richard has a meeting with a customer, we take our notes in that notebook. I don't need any connectivity there. When I get back online, that synchronization is going to publish that back. So that way, if you know Sean's going into a meeting after that, he can actually look back at our prior notes and see kind of some context around what was going on with that account, what the conversation was, what the outcomes were, and what action items were there. And speaking of action items, so there's something, you know, I've got kind of a simple checkbox here inside of OneNote, but we can too use some integration between Outlook and OneNote, and I can add tasks. You know, so Richard talked a little bit about tasks and assigning tasks and stuff like that. So from a someone who has to manage meetings on time to time and kind of have those nagging kind of follow-ups, this is fantastic because I can say, hey, that's going to be a task. It's going to be due tomorrow. When I do that, it creates an item inside of Outlook. And so in theory, we'll find out. Everybody cross your fingers here. There we go. So I've got this particular task. So this is created in the context of my inbox. And you'll see there it has a link back to the original item. So there's this kind of linkage between the two such that if I flag that task is complete inside of Outlook or inside of OneNote, it'll flag it in the opposite, you know, the other location. And so I'm generally the guy that whenever I complete a task, though I tend to delete them, but we'll mark this complete and then flip this over. And I can't remember if it's going to require me to be online to have that synchronized or not, but we'll keep our fingers crossed. And so the last bit that I wanted to touch on was Office Online. As you can imagine, that is suboptimal without a network connection. Yeah. So we'll keep our fingers crossed for the end of the next session, or the end of the third session, when we go through some of the co-authoring capabilities and things like that. Make sure, yeah, so viewed on mobile, that's all kind of fine and good. Can't synchronize, so you're not going to see anything special there. So with that, we'll open it up to a few questions and think, well, actually, no, we won't, because we have this, your
Let's
HDMI.
Let's go back to this quickly.
We'll go to that one, where your device actually is. There we go.
Questions, okay, so we mentioned,
you mentioned earlier that we would ask a couple of quick questions to see if you were paying attention and then give away some stuff. So this is a true or false, really the first person to raise your hand and then answer correctly. So kind of get your thoughts ready on this one. Clutter can be turned on and off at any time by a user. That, I think I saw your hand first. True, that's true, correct. Okay, so let's pull the box out here.
Get a hug.
No.
Get a hug.
From Karen.
Actually, we've got these little cool items there. Okay, and then let's do one more from James's session. True or false? I'll be looking up to see whose hands go up first. People are kind of like sitting like this already. A user can activate Office 365 Pro Plus on up to 10 PCs.
You're
doing
it like
false. That's correct. It's false. It's only 5. There you go.
Okay, now you guys can quiz us.
More questions.
I have a question. On the ribbon or the bar when you were showing off
the sweet tile, bar.
Yeah.
Is that only for Windows 8?
No.
No. No.
It hasn't rolled out to all clients yet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That as I was mentioning is still rolling out. Yeah, it's rolling out to the tenants.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true.
And that is something. If I had a network, I would show you the roadmap site. So roadmap.office.com does have a great breakdown of all the stuff that is planned, rolling out, deployed, all that kind of fun stuff. Yeah,
and to that end, there is a feature in Office 365 if you did want to get what's called first release, which is sort of a few weeks in advance of the actual feature starting to roll out to production tenants. You could enable that on a tenant if you're just wanting to kind of get a sense of what some of the capabilities are. Yeah. Yep, nope, that's rolling out. Question?
On your phone, you had Office Lens. What is that for?
So Office Lens is actually, it is something that kind of helps with the chicken scratch.
See if it's still loading up.
There we go. Yeah, so here's what we're going to do. It is for those instances where you have, and it's free on Windows Phone, so Office Lens. So you can go through and take a picture of something, and it will take care of the keystone, kind of flatten it out, and clean it up a bit. So in theory, if I kind of take this picture here, which by the way, I have kind of an inexpensive phone because I'm not a responsible adult, and I break my phones a lot.
And you can tell it whether you're taking a picture of a whiteboard or an actual picture, something else too.
Yeah.
And then.
So there's a trick to this. Yeah, so.
Wait, hang on. I'm going to come stand next to you awkwardly while you're talking to this mic.
A couple of tricks on this is.
So
on the OneNote piece, when we're sharing OneNote workbooks.
How do I turn this on?
When we do a lot of whiteboarding, which we do a ton of whiteboarding, I would suspect a lot of people in here do a ton of whiteboarding, we will take a picture. And then we'll take it with the Office Lens so it cleans it up. But what I do, this is a neat little trick. When you go into the room that you're going to whiteboard, put your phone up and figure out where the corners are, and then put your little corners on the whiteboard. And that way you get it all centered in there so you don't end up with all these little – so that's kind of what I do. So,
Sean's a bit of a thinker. That's great. Yeah, so as you can see here, it's try to clean that up a little bit, but I can go through and crop. You can tell it what this is. This is a document. The one I took earlier actually looks better. I'll show you what that looks like. But we can go through and make some edits and things like that. So that was the original.
Can't OneNote do the text from the
type? If you write better than I do, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. No, it can. Whenever you get into the full client, you can actually, and that is something I can show you.
Well, you can have it either convert to actual text, but by default, OneNote will convert to text behind the scenes and index it so that you can search your handwritten notes.
Yeah. So
and
if
I have not very good handwriting, and it actually does a pretty good job.
It'll start to learn.
Yeah.
You got to put some time into it. It'll eventually learn.
Yeah, so this is actually a historical version. So speaking of versioning, so OneNote does have the ability to do versioning. So when I was playing with this earlier, this is what came out. But we can go through and let me copy this guy real quick and see if I can paste this. Perfect. All right. So copy text from picture. Hopefully this doesn't put anything weird out there. We'll see how it goes. Perfect. There you go. Exactly. So again, if you write better than I do. Yeah. So let's control Z that. Yeah. So. Yeah. So we could do this. I remember how to convert to text now. This is embarrassing. That's what I was thinking. There we go. Ink to text. There we go. Bam. Howdy. There we go. So maybe my handwriting isn't as horrible as one might think. But I've got a little bit of noise coming through here, so.
Okay, which one's
the so, okay. You are HDMI.
Got it. Okay, and this we had mentioned a little bit earlier about the Office 365 public roadmap website. So if you hadn't seen this one yet, I don't know if you guys showed this yesterday or not, but I think you might have. If you go to, pardon me? Oh, okay, good. Okay.
We got a lot of questions about this site. So,
so those of you that maybe didn't see it yesterday, if you go to office.microsoft.com/roadmap, this is the site that you'll get. And to be repetitive for those of you that have seen it, effectively, we're grouping all of the capabilities within a six-month window that you can get a sense of what's coming in Office 365. All the things that have launched, those that are currently rolling out, as we mentioned, like with the App Launcher and Delve and so forth, will show up in here. Anything that we currently have in development or testing. And for that matter, in complete transparency, if there's any feature that we maybe have just canceled for whatever reason or another, we're going to list those things out here so you can basically kind of scroll into these and say apps for Office or Excel or Yammer Groups support and so on with a little screenshot and things like that. So this is a great website to bookmark and just be able to review every so often. Other questions so far about what we've covered? Okay.
And then too, does this meet expectations? Was this good? Was this engaging?
Yeah, because we're going to keep going
right?
Like this.
Because right now, this guy's got the best rated session. And I'm never going to hear the end of it. I'm just saying.
No, Avi and I do.
Avi sits right behind me in Austin. Yeah.
So evals are really useful for us. Obviously, we want to try to take your feedback and improve as much as possible. We're also glad to take kudos as well.
All sincerity, no. Rate it what you thought it was, and please provide comments. So I'll get over these guys razzing me if their session's rated better. The last sessions, they got some feedback, so we've adjusted for this session. So this is why this session differed from the one in prior cities. And so if there's anything that you think would make this better, absolutely let us know.
Stable internet.
Yeah, because we want to iterate. Yeah. Yeah.
That would be at the top of my list for sure.
So what?
Oh, wait. Bobby's got a thing.
Things. If you guys have additional ones that you'd love to see content around or ideas around, this could be love to hear that.
Yeah, and please put it in if you haven't. Absolutely make sure you're on the Office 365 Summit Yammer group.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Avi and myself, I post. Well, when you have network.
Yeah.
When you're back home.
What, yeah.
When you're back home, or no, not when you're driving, but yeah, when you're back home, get on the network, because Avi and I have already started to answer some questions this morning. We post some content, and we've titled it Adoption. So do the same for all of us.
Yeah.
The only thing I'll advocate, and then I'll be quiet and let these guys get onto their session, is that, you know, do use this stuff at home. Because I know we're in a business environment, and you're hearing a lot of a business focus. But like OneNote, just like James, I'm extremely passionate about OneNote because I live and breathe it at home, and I use it all the time for when I go on trips and all this other stuff. So that's the best place. Or Link, yeah. Link's bit. We usually put ours away from work a lot. So if we don't want the late evening IMs. But, yeah, you know, use that stuff at home, and then I think that's going to give you a better message to be able to talk about it in the workspace. So
yeah, I use it for shopping lists.
Other questions? There was another question.
Yeah, for Project Invisio, are you going to find cohort is better than you have right now, or CRM even online? I mean, I'm having issues with trying to get those to integrate.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Post that to Yammer. And time.
So
we are at time, though, so if y'all need to roll out, feel free.
So actually, yes, because if you look at the... Well, yeah, so that's a whole different scenario. Yeah, it's still going to be an additive SKU. You can do Project Online, Visio Online. There's still additives on top of the SKU model. There's, from what I understand, we're not licensing specialists. We don't work on the licensing team. But those will still always be an a la carte kind of thing because it's always been modeled that way. Project and Visio has always been a side secondary to the Office application. From a technology perspective, absolutely. If you look at what we've done with CRM, foundationally it sits on SharePoint as the content store. So we will continue to drive that. You're even seeing that with like SharePoint. SharePoint in the previous version, we put a lot of attention on performance point services to work the BI load. I'm not officially saying anything here at all because I'm not one of the product managers, but when you start to look at what we're doing with Power BI, that's going to be those focuses. So absolutely, it's going to bring these applications tighter and tighter and tighter, and that will continue to be the momentum.
Cool. Thanks, Sean. We need Jeff Spencer here. Any other questions so far? If other questions do come up and you think of them and you plan to come back for the next sessions, feel free to toss them out. Again, we're going to be around. We'll go ahead and take a short break, and then at 2:30, we'll pick up again with the run more effective meetings.